I hear people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight, I don't mind you switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fighting down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I sing in be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, fighting in a fought-down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you walking on the right beside me.
Good evening, this is Paul Fromm, and you're walking on the fighting side of me. More news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Anyway, wow, there's a lot of huffing and puffing up there on the internet, let's see, Jason Kenney, he's the former Minister of Immigration. He is now the head of the Conservative Party in Alberta, and he's a bit of a turkey. Kenney was a Minister of Immigration for a long time, and I ran against him in 2011 in the federal election in his home riding of Calgary Southeast. Kenny got all in a huff about my using the red ensign. Now, I don't know why he would get all in a huff, because when his government had a chance to bring it back as the official flag of Canada, they failed to do that. Anyway, he tweeted out something called Paul Fromm, hands off the red ensign. Get your racist hands off the red ensign. Now that's pretty much what I would expect of Jason Kenney. He's a just kind of a nasty bit of work, and he's a huge Zionist, pro-Zionist. And as Minister of Immigration, he continued the sellout and betrayal of Canadian politics of the European founding settler people. How did he do that? Well, he continued to have a record high, well, up until the Liberals took over in 2016. He continued to have record high levels of immigration. In doing so, continue to help speed the demise of the European founding settler people of this country. Beginning 35 years ago, 85% of each year's immigration intake is from the Third World. At first, when we were about 98% white back in 1965, a few more people from the Third World didn't seem to matter all that much. However, the numbers, the annual intake soared way up, and then the percentage of people from the Third World became fixed at about 85% about 35 years ago. The result is whites are now about 78% of Canada. And given present immigration levels and present white birth rate, which is below replacement, it's reasonably calculated that by 2050, or actually probably a little bit before, we will become a minority in our own country. Anyway, this is Jason Kenney. Keep your racist hands off the red ensign. You defile a noble flag under which 116,000 Canadians gave their lives. Shame on you. Well, not defiling the bravery of Canadians in two world wars in Korea. Bravery, yes. Whether they should have been in those wars, that's another matter. But we'd never defame the memory of those soldiers, those people. And my parents served in the Canadian Armed Forces in the Second World War. So no. Anyway, I replied to him, the red hand sign stands for the real Canada, European founded and settled, predominantly Christian and proud. And anyway, he snarks, it was a real pleasure beating you by 48,000 votes. Well, he did. I ran for a very minor party in an utterly unfunded campaign, unable to buy advertising. Yeah. And then Kay says, by all means, keep attacking me incessantly. I know you have nothing to do, else to do. I'm not sure that was actually directed at me. Yes. Then he says that he was proud to have the House of Commons bar me from using government facility for your hate speech. Free speech doesn't mean taxpayers paying for it, for your microphones. Well, hang on a sec. Taxpayers weren't paying for it. That was the Parliamentary Press Gallery. And this goes back to an incident in 2007 when, yeah, fat little Jason, he was then with the government in power, talked to the other House whips. And because he'd just been pressured by the B'nai B'rith, who happened to know that I was in Ottawa that day for a press conference, got them to agree to a unanimous consent. Now that means a motion which isn't debated at all. They just all agree to it and pass on. What they did was to ban me from the precincts, that is, from the property of the House of Commons. That was under the pressure of B'nai B'rith, and you know, it makes it quite clear who's calling the shots in this country. Well, what was I going to do? Now, this is what Kenny says, but to use the government facility for your hate speech. Well, now, unfortunately, hate speech, or willfully promoting hatred, is an offense in Canada. It should not be, but it is. Now, if indeed I was doing that, I would have been charged. And if I was found guilty, I could be fined or sent to prison for up to 2 years. Notice, I was banned before I ever opened my mouth. Another fellow, Alexan Kobashian, who's my associate back in those days in the Melissa Gill case, that was a freedom of speech case. I was going to use the press conference, and that's what the press release said. There was no mystery about it, to challenge rulings by the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal that truth was no defense. Get that. Truth was no defense. So what you said might be true, but if it was inconvenient or likely to expose a privileged minority, you know, race, sex, sexual orientation, religion, ethnic origin, expose a privileged group to, it was likely to expose a privileged group to hatred or contempt, that was considered a discriminatory practice. Well, of course, there are all sorts of problems with that. What's likely? Well, see, the prosecution didn't have to prove anybody actually read your internet posting and went from a position of neutrality to just blind hatred. So likely is entirely a judgment question. Hatred or contempt? Well, even assuming you can define hatred, what's contempt? Contempt is simply a negative feeling about another group where you look down on them. And maybe you look down on them for a good reason. In fact, the government's own sponsored advertising propagandizes against smoking. And, you know, there are pictures of diseased lungs and tongues or lips with growths or lesions on them and, you know, the usual stuff. If you believe that, you're likely to have a lower opinion of smokers. In other words, contempt. Well, our argument at many of these tribunals was that the remarks complained of were true or likely to be true. And that was what I wanted to bring across at the press conference. Not as Kenny says, to facility for your hate speech. The speech hadn't even been given. And this is the problem of the politically correct. They are prepared to ban something before you even open your mouth. And that really is totalitarian stuff. That's what you expect in a dictatorship. And indeed, that's what lobbyists like the old Canadian Jewish Congress and now the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith and the replacement for the Canadian Jewish Congress, which was is the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. This is what they try to do. They try to get people banned in advance, as they did last week with our memorial for Barbara Kolaschka. They're saying, well, they didn't like her because she defended Holocaust deniers. And there were people saying, well, the meeting was going to be Holocaust denial and hate speech and this and that. I don't see how you can ban something legitimately in advance. Somebody's going to say something. Well, unless you had a copy of the speech in advance, how can you legitimately ban it? And here Kenny was gloating that he had me banned from the House of Commons. In fact, this was outrageous to do that to people. And it was done at the behest of B'nai B'rith. I've had quite a back and forth with Kenny today on Twitter, and this is as people get more into it, and I deal with the old red ensign, that flag represents the real Canada, the Canada that was hijacked by Lester Pearson and the Trudeau Liberals, and as they replaced the flag and then began to replace the population. See, the old flag that stressed our British and European roots, the Christian cross within the Union Jack and so on, was a reproach to the the Canada that they were trying to create. And and so it had to go. And in fact, what Pearson and much more readily Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, and then after him, the Mulroney Conservatives, and then after them, Jean Chrétien, and then after him, Stephen Harper Conservatives, under whom Jason Kenney worked, all pursued that vision or mission, which was to have a large numbers of immigrants, even in times of high unemployment, to eventually replace the European founding settler people. I mean, there is no other way to read that other than as a deliberate policy, because by this point it's quite clear that's what's happening. If you disagreed with that trend, then you would change the policy. But they didn't. In fact, they doubled down on it. And so Kenny is very much part of that scene replacing the European founding settler people of this country. And that's what I nail him for. And others came to my support and defense. And of course, some agreed with him. But that's what this is all about. And Kenny, to my way of thinking, is a despicable person who sold out his people, the European founding settler people. Perhaps he doesn't see them as his people, and that's of course part of the problem. But these people who've done these types of things to us don't feel a loyalty to our people. Anyway, it remains an extremely exciting time, and as I explained yesterday, the Proud Boys are in almost complete turmoil. Yesterday they put up a new page on their Facebook and blocked me and others from commenting. I did put some comments in, including a videotape of my very short speech on Saturday. And of course it made fools of them, because there's nothing, you know, they said they rejected my ideology and it's despicable and racist, and they make no distinction on race or gender or anything else. You kind of wonder, what are you a Proud Boy for? I mean, what's this all about? You know, I mean, you're really same as just about everybody else on the left. So the Proud Boys changed their. In fact, the person doing this says, and this writer is Jewish, he's referring to himself, they changed their logo, and they have the red ensign, and they have a lot of stuff there about we fought in the Second World War, and we fought in Normandy, and I think it was Juneau Beach, and we fought Nazism, and so, well, the Canadian Army did do that. That was not the point of what I've been saying. The red ensign is not the flag of National Socialism. The red ensign is the flag of the traditional Canada. And I pointed out that many people, many vets, and I've had vets say this to me, if I had known that my buddies and I were going to go overseas and some of us would not come back and some of us would be giving up a number of years of our youth, just to turn this country into a third world country, we would never have gone. We were told, and this is probably largely wartime propaganda, that Hitler wanted to conquer the world and we had to help to stop him. Well, Hitler didn't want to conquer the world.
In fact, he offered Britain a deal whereby Britain retains the British Empire, basically it has a very large role in the rest of the world. All he wanted was a free hand in Central Europe and a free hand to attack the Soviet Union and to bring down communism and to reunite German lands that had been hived off from the Reich in the Treaty of Versailles. Those were his goals. He wasn't out to conquer the world. That was wartime hooey. And I know they're dead now, and I know soldiers who fought and said, you know, knowing what I do now, I regret having gone over. But we had no quarrel with the Germans. We weren't lied to. But anyway, that in no way denigrates the courage of the men and women who fought in our armed forces. Anyway, I think what the Proud Boys are trying to do is to hold themselves as more anti-Nazi and more anti-racist than even the Antifa. And somehow, maybe they'll get a good press. Well, they're dreaming. They won't get a good press, and the Antifa and the Jewish lobby groups will continue to hate them, because they don't even like any glimmer of pride. It's sad to see a group, or maybe I should say, the leadership of the group, so completely immolate itself, and lose a lot of support that it has among its own members. We've been contacted by a number of Proud Boy members who are proud and think their leadership is anything but proud, and is actually quite despicable. It's interesting to see the confusion spread by the enemy, and it reminds me of lessons I've learned in the years in politics, and that one of the strongest weapons our enemies have against us is divide and conquer. What they fear is white unity. What they fear, even apart from white unity, if there was a unity on freedom of speech, if people across racial lines, and there are non-whites who agree with freedom of speech, solidly backed freedom of speech and said, we stand on this principle. A lot of the power of the Jewish lobby to silence people would be gone. If people on principle said, I don't care what the guy believes, he's got a right to say it. Well, there it goes. See, what they would like to do is say, but you know, he shouldn't be allowed to speak this. You know, he's got links with, he's got a connection to Ernst Zundel or this or that. If people operated on principle and said, well, that may or may not be true, I don't care, that'd be the end of it. And that would be an end or a very significant obstacle to their attempts to shut people down. Doug Christie put it together many years ago, and he said, you know, the process used by the enemies of free speech in this country are threefold: demonize, isolate, and criminalize. And they don't all have to be, it doesn't all have to be to go the distance, you know. Demonize, well, there they use the lamestream media that lies. It lies, lies, lies. Donald Trump's absolutely right. They lie, or they so distort that any reasonable person will get the wrong impression, which is exactly the impression they want you to get. For instance, the vile coverage of our memorial for Barbara Kalashka last week. Let me see, what was the, I was going to read it, the National Post, and it's a neocon, sort of sometimes conservative paper, say sometimes. What did they say, call it? I have it here. Yeah, here, there's the headline. Far-right extremists converge at memorial. Far-right extremists converge at memorial. And then to illustrate that, they've got these three masked characters. These are members of the Antifa, but they're not identified as that. A big picture that I would say covers, maybe a fifth of the page. Three masked people stood outside the Richfield branch of the Toronto Public Library Wednesday while a memorial for lawyer Barbara Kolaska was held. You know, it would be a fair interpretation that those people were participants, maybe bodyguards or goons or something. Well, they're goons probably, but they weren't part of the meeting. In fact, they were there to protest it until the police told them they weren't getting in. That's the sort of a vile coverage by the controlled media. And so they demonize people. And the point of the demonization is to isolate. Now, if they've demonized you, then many people who might be your potential supporters or people who cooperate with you draw back and say, well, he's a Nazi, or he's a, what is it? He's a far-right extremist. Well, I pointed out to a number of people, what is far-right extremism about honoring the memory of a free speech lawyer? That doesn't strike me as far-right. Well, is it? See, these demonization words are used to blacken your reputation in the hopes it will isolate you. And that's the way the Jewish lobby has tried to handle me probably for 30 years, to try to drive me out of lamestream politics, and they have had some success with that. They got Preston Manning, who was a complete servant of Zionism, as his father had been, to purge populists from the Reform Party. I was one of those who was they claimed they took my membership away, but I never had a membership. But I actually made a donation to a Reform Party candidate who was Chinese. They were running in my own riding, and they returned the money. but their idea is, if they can demonize you, they can isolate you, and you will not have much influence. That's the way this dirty game is played. Well, how do you counter that? Well, one way to counter that is to constantly undermine the demonization. Now, until we had the internet, that was hard to do. A lot of people who may have read in the lamestream media a lying, defamatory story about you believed it, and if they didn't know you, well, must be true, you know, the media wouldn't lie. Well, more and more people are beginning to realize the media does lie. But with the coming of the media, we have radio like what you're listening to right now. We have YouTubes. We have our own websites, so that people can take a look, and in many cases will get a completely different notion from what they were told by the lying mass media. Some of what I see going on, and it's something that we have to fight back against. You know, complacency, frankly, in my opinion, is not an option. If we're complacent, then they will prevail. And one of the reasons there was so much grief and upset over the weekend was that it appeared that, for once, that the demonization had not exactly worked. That without their demonic whispers in people's ear, he's a Nazi, or he's associated with Ernst Zundel or Holocaust denial. Without that, ordinary and fairly idealistic people saw me as a reasonable, decent guy. And of course, if enough people can get through these lies, the power of the enemy will be greatly reduced. Well, I want to thank Jerry for sending this my way. One old deplorable to another. Not 75 yet. I used to think I was just a regular guy. He is a fellow's a farmer. I used to think I was just a regular guy, but I was born white.
which now, whether I like it or not, makes me a racist. I'm a fiscal and moral conservative, which by today's standards makes me a fascist. I'm a heterosexual, which according to gay folk makes me a homophobe. I'm non-union, which makes me a traitor to the working class and an ally of big business. I'm a Christian, which now labels me as an infidel. I'm older than 70, which makes me a useless old man. I'm proud of my heritage and our Canadian culture, which makes me a xenophobe. I think and I reason, therefore I doubt much that the mainstream media tells me, which makes me a reactionary. I value my safety and that of my family, and I appreciate the police and the legal system, which makes me a right-wing extremist. I believe in hard work, fair play, and fair compensation according to each individual's merits, which today makes me an anti-socialist. I believe in the defense and protection of my homeland for and by all citizens, which now makes me a militant. Recently, a woman called me and my friends a basket of deplorables. Please help me come to terms with the new me, because I'm not just sure who I am anymore. I would like to thank all my friends for sticking with me through these abrupt, newfound changes in my life and my thinking. I just can't imagine or understand what's happening to me so quickly. Funny, it's all taken place in just the last 7 or 8 years. As if all this crap wasn't enough to deal with, I'm now afraid to go into either restroom. You know, one of the ways we can take back our countries is to use humor. The enemy has no sense of humor. They are very, very mockable. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Going to play three tunes, this musical interlude, that have to do with Ulster. And last week, the 12th, was the King Billy's Day, commemorating the victory at the Battle of the Boyne in Ireland in 1690, where William of Orange won the battle against the Catholic James II, who was trying to regain the throne. William of Orange became the King of England, and along with his Queen Mary, re-established Protestantism, because there was some thought that under James II, England could go back to being a Catholic country. It was partly about religion, but there were other things going on. For instance, James and William were related. Hard to believe. The Pope actually backed Catholic James? No, William of Orange. Well, why would that be? Well, James' big ally was Louis XIV of France, and the Pope believed Louis was getting too big for his britches. Anyway, I'm simplifying, but what has come down to us in history is not exactly what happened there. Anyway, the Ulster Protestants are very proud of the 12th of July, and I'm going to play a couple of Ulster Protestant tunes, and this one is called Ulster Girl, and hope you like this. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, we got the end of that. Maybe we could actually start it at the beginning, which would seem like a good place.
Our enemy knows for far. eyes I pray. God bless the men who forsake their love and freedom give. God bless the mother of Easton who nursed the cowardly slave. Well, the officer girded me, I'll tell you that I'll die to keep this land of ours still free. And if the lost are freedom, my heart will break in two. And if I couldn't be there, well, I don't know. We took them to the dead. We gave all you all treasure friends to serve his country best. And if he died, I'd rather lie beside him in our grave. And be a mother of a slave. Well, the answer girded me, and I'll tell you honestly that I'll die to keep this land of ours still free. Our freedom, my heart will break in two. And if I couldn't be there, well, I don't know what to do. Well, the officer girded me, and I'll tell you
and that's an Ulster girl. And this is Paul Proman. You're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Gotta play another tune here to this is called Bury Me Under the Red Hand, and the red hand is the symbol of Ulster.
Bury me hand. No matter fighting for Ulster, it's done. I was mother than you on the radio. Oh my son, oh my son, she did cry. Sighed when the last words were spoken. For her son was a hero when he died. Will you bury me under the red pine? Will you bury me under the jack? Will you bury me under the red pine? Am I fighting for Ulster, dear God? Will you bury me under the red pine? Will you bury me under the jack? Will you bury me under the red pine? For my fighting for Ulster is done. My fighting for Ulster is gone.
And that's Bury Me Under the Red Hand. I'm going to have play one more tune here on this musical interlude, and this is called, well, we've got to find it first, don't we? And this is, well, we'll have to back that up a little bit. This is a very bitter song, and it reflects the feeling of betrayal people in Ulster had in the First World War. They raised the 36th Division of the British Army. Over 20,000 Ulstermen participated in the bloodbath on July 1st, 1916, the Battle of the Somme, and took fantastic casualties. And at the end of the war, Ulster, which had loyally stood with Britain, found that that part of Ireland was going to be given away, including three counties that were traditionally considered part of Ulster. They were going to be given to the newly created Irish Republic, primarily Roman Catholic. Anyway, this is what is discussed in this song, Under an Englishman's Command.
The spurs of July morn, when Ulster men are rightly proud of a land where they were born. I'll tell you of our volunteers and how it came to pass, as they went to fight for England's cause, far away from old Belfast. It was in the dark, uncertain days of early World War I, when England's shores were threatened by the jack boot of the Hun. When England's cry for help was heard, we bid her not no fear. For unless the Flanders fields we will send our Ulster volunteers. It was at a place they call the Somme on the first day of July, when 20,000 Ulster men prepared to fight and die. Sure they bravely charged through no man's land with the rain and flying high. With the cry
of no surrender, boys, all those there's battle cries. Now those Germans in their trenches deep do scarce believe they rise. When and charge those Ulster men and hear their battle cries, what kind of men are those, they said, who would leave their native land just to die upon this battlefield? And what is that strange red hand? Now on and on they fought that day, where others feared to pray. And on the wire and in the mud, they left behind their dead. But the only flag to fly that day behind those German lines was the old red hand of Ulster, with the shamrocks round her name. Now those who lived came home again, what changes did they all find? For the Nazis that made Ulster up no longer numbered nine. Three counties had been sold away by those they fought to save. Yes, this was England's gratitude for the sacrifice they made. So gather round, my comrades, on this 1st of July morn, when Ulster men are rightly proud of the land where they were born. For they'll never more be led away to fight in foreign land, or to die for someone else's cause at an English man's command, or die for someone else's cause at an English man's command.
And that's a great song there, Under an Englishman's Command, reflecting the very deep unhappiness many people in Ulster felt after their sacrifices in the Great War. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and still on the theme of, here's a great write-up by Brad Salzberg. It's called Omar Khadr and the Liberal War on English Canada. A recent payout of $10.5 million to convicted terrorist Omar Khadr represents a watershed moment in the history of political correctness in Canada. As endorsed by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Mr. Khadr has hit the jackpot and can now settle into a life of luxury upon Canadian soil. Not bad for a terrorist convicted of murder. While there isn't a politician, past or present, who has disgraced our country with the vigor of Justin Trudeau, the road to the loss of our national dignity did not originate with our current Prime Minister. We can attribute to the founder of Canada's collective self-loathing, his father. Pierre Trudeau is the most understood figure in Canadian history. A maverick political figure from day one, Trudeau Sr. thumbed his nose at Western institutions of his day while embracing socialist ideology discovered during his travels as a student in Asia. Somewhere between the opium smoking and the Communist Manifesto, Trudeau discovered his true ideological calling.
His true ideological calling. And where is this page gone on me?
Yes. As an irreverent intellectual with a predisposition toward his political nemesis, British colonialism, and the institutions created in its image. From his first term as Prime Minister in 1968 to his final curtain call early in the 1980s, Pierre worked to erode Canada's connection to Britain and the Commonwealth for the purpose of empowering minority communities as well as the legal industry who support them. Trudeau introduced the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. In an effort to advance the rights of special interest groups, Trudeau created the Court Challenges Program, a big particularly for radical feminists, enabling these entities to take legal action based upon perceived social injustices. The outcome was a fundamental transformation within society. Power and influence shifted away from the Canadian majority and into the hands of taxpayer-funded interest groups, multicultural organizations, human rights tribunals, and other leftist institutions. Thus, a new Canada was born, though it would take decades for the general public to understand exactly what had occurred. It is arguable most still do not comprehend the full picture. To understand the roots of our reimagining of our nation, we look to the fateful day in 1971 when Pierre Trudeau introduced multiculturalism to Canada. Without any form of mandate or approval from the Canadian people, Pierre Trudeau canceled our bicultural English and French Canadian identity and replaced it with a multicultural policy. Few at the time were aware of the pending side effects, namely that multiculturalism would not be inclusive of Anglophone or Francophone identity. Indeed, it was and remains the exclusive domain of migrants from Asia and the Middle East. As decades passed and third world immigration began to alter our demographic makeup, a powerful industry came into existence. This collective of immigration pundits, academics, and media, as well as the government itself, began to alter our national destiny. By way of an accusation of historical racism toward third world and first nations communities, these are Indians, by way of an accusation of historical racism toward third world and Native Indian communities, our diversity warriors were able to convince the Canadian majority to question and ultimately dislike the heritage of their own nation. At present, we see this manifested in Prime Minister Trudeau's litany of apologies to our LGBT, Chinese, Muslim, and Sikh communities. Never mind the fact that Italian, German, and Ukrainian Canadians were sent by the thousands to internment camps under the War Measures Act in the First and Second World War. Racism in Canada is an exclusive of the Third World, and these forces intend to keep that way. Waving a collective finger at the descendants of the founders of our nation, we are informed by politically oriented new arrivals that Canada is built on stolen land, and if we don't cooperate, or perhaps even if we do, they will work to steal it back. Actually, any foreigner who says that should, on the spot, be given a good swift kick in his ample butt and be told to leave. You think we stole this country from the Indians? Well, obviously, you don't want to be a part of that theft, do you? You go. You've got a bad attitude. You're wrong. You know, we've got to be a lot more aggressive in handling these people. Naturally, Justin Trudeau is all in on this campaign. Raised within an environment of malevolence toward English Canada, as well as within earshot of his father Pierre's admiration for communism, Justin is the perfect pitchman for what he refers to as postmodern Canada. That means non-white, which really means a Canada devoid of Anglophone identity. Canada has seen its share of the Trudeau family's disdain for both democratic process and the will of the majority. Multiculturalism, which became official policy in 1988, was a unilateral decision on the part of the government, if not on the part of Pierre himself. Both father and son share an affinity for believing their personal will equates with public will, a personality trait bordering on the delusional. Pierre Trudeau began Canada's long day's journey into cultural demise. But it's son Justin who will finish off Anglo-Canada for good by way of mass immigration, another nation-changing policy devoid of public input. Justin is leading us down a path toward a complete societal inversion. By way of measures such as Islamophobia, that was motion M103, our so-called minorities are today the preferred communities of choice, while old-stock Canadians are rendered perfunctory at best. Out with the old, in with the new, appears to be the maxim of Prime Minister Trudeau and his sunny gang of cultural eradicators. Recently, Trudeau Jr., informed us Canada belongs more to immigrants than Canadian-born citizens, as a liar, take Canada for granted. This reveals what general society should have understood decades ago, that the concept of equality for all Canadians by way of multiculturalism is a myth. The true diversity agenda is not unlike what is found in George Orwell's classic political treatise on communism, Animal Farm. All are equal, but some are more equal than others, or all animals equal, some are more equal than others. If and when Canadian-born citizens wake up to the fact that an injustice of grand design is at the heart of the Trudeau agenda, perhaps the dignity lost in a whirlwind of diversity and political correctness can be returned to the descendants of those who built our country. Good essay there by Brad Salzberg of Vancouver, and he has a political party called the Cultural Action Party. So glad to read that, and makes a lot of very, very good points about the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow night, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf. Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.